You found the Mama Shift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Liz Walker. So multitask away and get inspired and empowered to create the life of your dreams.
Okay, cool. All right. Welcome to the Mama Shift podcast. I'm so excited to have you here. I have a very, very special guest with me. She was the first person to introduce me to podcasts and had me on her show, which I was very nervous about. I'm sure she's not as nervous to be on my show as I was for her. But Courtney Townley is my guest. She's the host of the Grace and Grit podcast, and she does awesome things with women through their health and wellness. She began working in the fitness industry over 2 decades ago when she transitioned from the professional dance world. She graduated from the University of Michigan with a BFA and is fully certified as a STOT Pilates instructor, national strength and conditioning personal trainer, ACE health coach, and precision nutrition level 2 coach. She's also a very proud student of the IDO portal method. Courtney helps women all over the globe take better care of themselves with more consistency and ease through her online coaching programs and through her podcast, the Grace and Grit podcast. Courtney is passionate about a multidimensional approach to health and wellness and helps women to build sustainable practices to support their body, mind, and soul, which I love. And I'm so excited to have you. Thanks for being here, Courtney.
Oh, it's such an honor to be here. I adore you. And I was really just tickled that you asked.
Oh, well. You were one of the first person on my list because I know what great things you're doing. And so it was, I wanted to make sure that everyone was exposed to you. So
I love it.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about some really cool stuff today, mostly self-care through different ages, because you work with a bunch of different women, obviously different ages. Do you specialize particularly in a certain age group of the women that you work with?
I think it's an interesting question. You know, I feel like the sort of the population has chosen me more than I chose them. But I would say on, you know, the bulk of the people I work with, I would say are between the ages of like early 30s to early 60s. Okay. So I certainly have outliers. I have clients that are much older than that. And I have clients that I have girls in college, but I do work with, I would say the majority is that 30 to 60 age group.
Okay, awesome. And then you have kind of an interesting story where you took your practice all online. Do you want to just give people a little bit of an outline of how you did that? Because I know it's kind of a fun story.
Yeah. Well, and I also think it's so applicable to your podcast because motherhood definitely transitioned me in so many ways, and I had to start thinking differently about my career. So I worked in person with my clients for many, many years. I would from the time I was 21 up until I had my son. At 34 years old, when I had my son, I had my own studio. So I was seeing, you know, up eight to 10 clients a day. Mm-hmm. And I was also simultaneously dipping my toe into health coaching. So I started health coaching when I was about 30, and I was already working with people on the phone and online, but I just felt like I couldn't really make that complete shift, partly because I love teaching movement, and that was just a big part of who I was at the time. And I also just felt like I was really nervous because I didn't think I could get enough business to support 100% health coaching.
Right.
So, long story short, a year after I had my son, I had some real challenges in my birth. My birth was amazing, but after the fact, I had to have a DNC and I had to have 3 units of blood, which is a lot of blood. I had a blood transfusion.
My goodness.
And I was kind of the mindset that, oh, I'll just bounce back. I'm so fit and I'm so healthy and I'll just go back to working with clients at 5 a.m. and get thrown right back into my crazy schedule. And I did that at an enormous price.
Right.
So I was exhausted. I was reactive. I really deeply struggled with my first year of motherhood. I think I would have struggled even if that hadn't happened because it was just so new to me and I really didn't know what to expect.
Right.
But I definitely think physically feeling so terrible and not giving myself what I needed to heal did not help matters at all. So at the end of that first year, I made the very difficult decision to close my business, to close my brick and mortar studio and to just have faith that I could grow this online business that I'd been dabbling in for years. And it really was not a painful transition. In fact, you know, I very quickly started building up my clientele and I really started to reap the benefits of not working with so many people in the flesh, because as you well know, one-to-one work in the training world, it's a lot of physical energy.
Totally.
And I was already in a deficit because of my first year of sort of dismissing my own physical health.
Yeah.
And so I really started to heal quite profoundly. I stopped nursing after the first year. I closed that brick and mortar studio. And I just, I was able to take care of myself at a higher level because I shift the dynamic of how I was working. And I couldn't have seen the beauty on the other side unless I just kind of jumped, right? And I just had to take that risk and I did, and it worked out.
Do you think that it did work out so quickly because you were willing to take that big jump and you weren't like holding on to a few things that were maybe holding you back, and you were just able to be like, all right, I've got to go for this. It's the only way, but I've got to actually just ditch everything else and go for it.
Yeah. I felt like I knew in my heart of hearts it was the right decision, but I will say that I struggled with just the decision of letting go of something that had been my identity for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, that was tough because I just felt like, oh my gosh, you know, people aren't going to understand and I'm not going to have this brick and mortar business anymore. And how are people going to interpret that? You know, all the games we play with ourselves, we make it out, you know, how people are going to interpret our decision. And of course that didn't serve me at all. So I will say that I didn't struggle at all, but ultimately I, you know, worked through it well enough that I was able to make it work.
Well, I think you said something pretty awesome just before. You said you had to change yourself to be this online person. And I mean, you went through that with the first year of motherhood anyway. So you're already kind of in this period of growth as a person. And then to be able to keep going with that growth, you almost had momentum to do that. And obviously it's never easy, but maybe it just kind of was the push that you needed to.
But I think that's such a great point because I definitely, had somebody told me in advance how difficult motherhood is, I may not have had children.
Yeah, totally.
I know people talk about it, but they don't really let you in on how difficult parenting is. No, it's really the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah, and I don't think you can't impress on someone how hard it is. You have to.
You cannot. No way. You cannot explain to somebody who does not have children what parenting is.
Yeah.
Like, can't, you have to try it on. And I feel the same way about my online business. If somebody had told me how difficult and how many new things I would have to learn in order to take this new thing on, I might not have done it.
Totally.
But because I just took that leap of faith and I knew that I was gonna have to learn some things, and I gave myself just the grace of knowing I was going to screw through some things up and not do things perfectly, you know, that kept me in it and allowed me to grow it to what it is now.
Nice. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Love it. So we're going to talk a little bit about self-care through the kind of different age ranges of femalehood, I guess.
Yes.
Do you have any common threads that people of women for all ages, need, or that you talk about a lot and it is not age specific?
Definitely. I mean, I think then the main tenets that I always speak to are, of course, nutritional density, right? Mm-hmm. It may change through the ages and stages of our life in terms of what our body needs to feel supported. But the reality is we always need to be putting attention on the fuel we're bringing in.
Right.
And how we're supporting our body on a nutritional level. I would also say that, movement is something that goes across all ages and stages of life. Moving our body, becoming stagnant is never a healthy thing. I would also say that getting proper rest, and this is something, again, that there's a lot of variability at different places in our life, but that there is a common thread of always needing to honor our body with proper rest, because mm-hmm. that's, I always tell my clients, that's where all the magic happens.
Totally.
You know, our hormones kind of, you know, reset and our brain cashes out and our immune system is fortified in the sleeping hours. Mm-hmm. And so if we cheat ourselves of sleep, we're definitely going to run into some problems. Mm-hmm. I would also say connection with others.
Oh, you know, nice.
Is something I'm talking a lot more about, I would say, in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Because as you probably well know, like, one of the biggest challenges any human being faces in modern day age is this stress load. Mm-hmm. You know, stress is coming in our lives in so many different capacities. It's coming in through the food choices we're making. It's coming in through lack of movement or too much movement, not enough sleep, mental stress and emotional stress, chemical stress. Stress is a very real thing that we're contending with all the time and has a huge potential to break down our health. And connection really helps us to stimulate oxytocin, right? That feel-good love hormone pumping through our system, which actually counteracts the stress hormone of cortisol. So I feel it's really easy this day and age when we have so much to do and we have so much potential to do everything online. It's very easy to isolate.
Right.
And I think that that is really wearing on people's health in so many ways. And also, I think that in the age of social media, it's so easy to look at everyone's life as perfect and happy and wonderful, because you know everyone's just showing their highlight reel.
Oh, for sure.
But then we take that as real, as reality, mm-hmm. and we start struggling emotionally with the way we're living our own life, and we feel embarrassed or maybe a little bit shameful of sharing that with other people, and that's a huge mistake. Mm-hmm. And I think that can really take its toll. And the final thing I would say, like the common thread I see across every age of woman, is just kind of struggle with habitual patterns, right? That habit is what really got us to where we are, wherever we are in our life. And a lot of that is probably good, but mm-hmm. I don't know a person on the planet who doesn't want to improve their life in some way. Mm-hmm. And if we really want to get to the root of what is leading us in the direction of progress or not, we have to be willing to look at our habits. So I would say just challenges around habits and learning how to change habits in a way that's actually productive and sustainable is something I see women struggle with across the board.
Yeah, because it's so easy to be like, oh, 30-day quick fix. Challenge, da da da, and then when 30 days are up, it's like, what do you do? Have you changed a habit, or have you just been really good for 30 days?
And I think you're spot on. I think it's the media culture, right, that kind of crams this message down women's throats that we have to take extreme measures in short time frames to produce massive results, and then we wonder why we're so overwhelmed and can't sustain that behavior change. And it's really no mystery. No. But the other thing that I think happens is that women get to a point where they feel so lousy that they want to change it overnight.
Right.
And because our culture allows them to believe that's possible, they buy into all these crazy practices that are promising that they can have that.
Right.
And they can stay in that vicious cycle for their entire life. I've seen it happen. I know you've seen it happen.
Oh yeah. It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. Never thought about it like that. Crazy. Okay. You did mention, I was really surprised to hear you mention connection, but I think you're so spot on with that, because it's so easy to think you are connecting with people through social media. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I'm involved with their life and I'm connecting like through private messaging or whatever, but it's not the same as like sitting down and having a cup of coffee or sitting down and like playing with your kid on the floor. It's just so different.
And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's that, like, touch is such an essential human need. Mm-hmm. And I don't care how many friends you have online or how much you connect with your coworkers online, they're not in the flesh. You don't have that direct connection. And I really think that that is so, so, so important.
Mm-hmm. Love it. So good. Okay, so on the common thread, what do you see is the biggest obstacle for people that you deal with?
The biggest obstacle. I would say that it's really easy to commit. I mean, it really is. You know, people sign up for things all the time. They buy the book, they sign up for the program, they listen to the podcast, they hire the mentor, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Commitment is not really the challenge, I don't think. Huh. I think what the challenge is what happens once we make the commitment. Like when you make a new commitment, the next thing is that you actually have to start putting rubber to the road. You actually have to start engaging with the work.
Mm-hmm.
And the work is uncomfortable.
Right.
Because the work is likely, if it's going to change you in any way, it's likely going to be something that is different than how you've been doing things.
Mm-hmm.
So discomfort is going to show up, no question, if you are on the path of really making this kind of meaningful change in your life. And when discomfort shows up, a lot of hard emotions show up with it.
Mm-hmm.
We experience fear. We experience doubt. We experience frustration and anger and shame. I mean, the litany of what we would almost label as negative emotion. I don't like saying bad emotion or negative emotion, mm-hmm. but for lack of a better way of kind of categorizing those emotions, I would say that. And that, when we start feeling those things, what so often happens is we go back to commitment. We start committing to something else.
Right.
We start seeking out a new book, a new program, a new guru, mm-hmm. a new thing, because we didn't have the courage or the tools, and often it's both,
mm-hmm.
to learn how to work through those emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can never really get to the results phase because we are unwilling to work through the discomfort phase.
Love that. It's so true.
It's so true. And it doesn't, so and every woman at every age and stage of life can identify with that.
Oh, I can totally, I could think of like 8 examples in my own life right now.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, oh, I'll just buy this book. And then like, oh, this is too hard. Or, oh, I don't have time. And that's like the biggest excuse out there.
But I think you just nailed another one, because that was going to be another thing that I mentioned about just what all women struggle with is creating time.
Right.
That when we commit to up-leveling our life in some way, if we truly want to be successful, we have got to acknowledge the necessity of carving out time in our life to make room for that newness.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like telling your kid, you know, signing your kid up for piano lessons, but then never creating time to practice piano at home.
Mm-hmm.
Like no one would think that that's a reasonable strategy. And yet that's how I see so many adults trying to go about the change process. I'll commit to up-leveling my life in this way, but I'm not going to create the time in my schedule to actually do the work.
Totally.
So.
And that's a hard thing in that first year of parenthood, which I'm finding now, because I realized that since having Cohen, I had so much time on my hands before. I was like, what did I do with it all? Like, why did I ever think I didn't have time? And now I'm like, I have literally 5 minutes to get what I need done.
Yeah.
Because he might wake up or he's going to melt down or whatever it is. And so I don't have time to procrastinate. I'm like, I need to get shit done now. And if I don't, then it's on me. It's not on him. It's not his fault.
And I think that the beautiful thing about motherhood is because we do all of a sudden have such a limited amount of time, like more so than at any other point in our life. I think the beautiful thing about that is it forces us to prioritize.
Yeah, totally.
And for me personally, like I'm a crazy excitable creature. I want to be a part of everything. It's mm-hmm. easy for me to say no to things I don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But where I struggle is saying no to things that I do want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And as a new mother, or as a mother at any age, right. I think that if you have a child in the house, if you want to be healthy and you want to enjoy your life, you have to recognize that energy is a limited resource.
Right.
And so even if everything you're committed to right now is awesome and you love it and you want to be a part of it, you have to be reasonable with yourself that you can't be a part of all things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a place where a lot of people in general, but especially women, struggle, is that we don't want to parent ourselves. We don't want to say no to some things that we actually enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
I actually recorded a podcast just yesterday, and I was talking about this exact issue, how my son was invited to like several parties last weekend. And of course he wanted to go to all of them. Mm-hmm. But as the parent, I knew that if I allowed him to go to all of the parties, I would have a monster on my hands.
Yep.
And the same is true. Like, we're moving into the holiday season right now, right? And I always, this time of year, I always do a lot of work with my clients around kind of helping them to maintain their sanity and health, because it's so easy to let it go this time of year.
Yeah.
And I think it's very closely related to that instance I just described with my son. There are so many things that I want to be a part of this season, but I'm already going into the season with a very full schedule. Uh-huh. And so unless I want to sacrifice my sleep, which I don't, because sleep is like my saving grace on everything, I have to learn how to say no to things that I want to say yes to.
Right.
So I have to learn, like, really what are my priorities and how do I really want to feel on the other side of this? Mm-hmm. Because my energy circle is only so big.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that. Women have a hard time saying no in general, but then you're asking them to say, now you're asking them to say no to things they actually want to do. And so that is probably even harder.
It really is, because, you know, I feel like at some point when we cross over the threshold of adulthood, it's like all of a sudden we don't want to have any boundaries.
Yeah.
We want what we want and we want it now.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to be told no. In a lot of ways we're acting like great big toddlers.
Totally.
So if we can learn how to, manage our energy in terms of, okay, I only have so much energy in the day. What are the maybe three or four most important things to me today? Because if I commit to more than that, of course I'm going to end the day feeling resentful and tired and frustrated and like I didn't succeed at anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that sucks.
Yeah. And then that starts a cycle of downward spiral, right?
Right. And when we aren't feeling successful, you know, we're a lot more likely to engage with behaviors that aren't so healthy for us.
Yes.
Because definitely. When we feel bad mentally and emotionally, we tend to engage with behaviors that feed those emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It can definitely be a dangerous spiral.
Yeah. That's why we don't keep chocolate in the house very often.
I'm with you. Exactly.
It's not there. It's really hard to eat. Awesome. How has your own self-care evolved over your kind of 20s and 30s now that you, because you're just turned 40 not that long ago, right?
Yeah, I'll be 42 in February.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. It goes so fast.
Yeah.
And my son is 9, which is still, it's an age, it's such a great age because he can do so many things for himself, and he's also, I can engage with conversations, and it's just it's a really cool time. But I also feel like my son needs so much of my time in a different way.
Right.
Like, I'm not feeding him and changing his diaper and, you know, putting him down for naps and those kinds of things, but emotionally there's such a deep need for my time there.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was in my 20s, my priorities at that stage of my life were very different than they are now. So my priorities in my 20s were making money, was dating boys, right? Like, I wanted to find like my significant other.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of, I don't know, just enjoying life. I didn't really have a lot of responsibilities in my 20s other than paying my bills. And I had a lot of time to dedicate to movement and to health, because that was something that I always had an interest in.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to give, you know, tons and tons of time. And I was really concerned about how I looked at that age, because health at that age was just about how I looked.
I mean,
we're being really honest.
Yeah.
It wasn't about, you know, being chemically balanced and having my hormones in check and getting sleep. It was about looking hot.
Yeah. And if you weren't out drinking, you might felt bad for like half a day, but then you felt good afterwards.
So exactly. Like, I recovered more easily,
yeah,
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
My body generally dealt with stress much more easily.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I became a mother, which was again at 34, I kind of had a rude awakening, you know, that not only was my time not my own, but my body was also kind of demanding other things from me. Mm-hmm. I needed more rest. I needed to feed my body a little bit differently because, again, I was always concerned about how I looked physically in my 20s. Mm-hmm. But as I crossed over the threshold of 30, I was really not feeling well. This was before I got pregnant. I was a trainer at that time, but I didn't really know a lot about wellness aside from exercise. Mm-hmm. And so my approach was always, if I want more of a response in my body, more energy, more weight loss, anything like that, I'm just going to push harder. Well, pushing harder eventually broke me down.
Right.
Right. And so I ended up having to seek out some help from a health coach because I knew that there were clearly things I was missing in my own process, mm-hmm. that just going harder in the gym was not getting me to feel better. And I had experienced several miscarriages. So there were things that were just very indicative that something was off. Mm-hmm. So I learned how to actually fuel my body. I started eating a lot more food, not less, which made me feel like a rock star. My workouts became so much better. I started sleeping better. I was a happier person, less mm-hmm. reactive. And it was all because I started eating more and exercising actually a little bit less, which mm-hmm. is very counter to what our culture tells us.
Totally. Yeah.
Now, I wasn't eating crap food. And I was still working out. It was just, I was shifting my focus to more mm-hmm. nutrient-dense food and not such aggressive exercise. Mm-hmm. And then when I had my son, you know, it was again, still my default mode to just push hard, you know, mm-hmm. that I didn't really understand the massive kind of trauma that my body just experienced.
Yeah.
And so again, I wasn't very graceful in how I handled that, but it was a great lesson. Because I really learned on the other side how different ages and stages of life demand a different level of self-care. Mm-hmm. So I would say largely my 30s were about learning how to extend grace to myself because grit comes very naturally to me. Mm-hmm. Grit is to me, like I can do the work, I can do more work, I can meet deadlines, I can do the workouts, create the meal plans, all these crazy things. But without balancing it with grace, mm-hmm. which is giving yourself permission to back the hell off sometimes.
Totally.
And giving yourself permission to reshape and remold and redefine what health even means to you at this stage of your life. Mm-hmm. Because once you have a kid, holy cow, do your priorities change.
Yep.
And I started to recognize, obviously, that my priority wasn't, I mean, I still, you know, as a woman, we always want to look good. Like, I don't care who you are. That's always going to, you're always going to have some part of yourself that you want to feel attractive. Mm-hmm. And yet I didn't want that to be my life's work. You know, I wanted my son to be my life's work and my career and my husband and all these other dimensions to my life that I spent a lot of time in my 30s building. And so crossing into the threshold of 40, you get to look at that even again because hormones become obviously, they shift dramatically. We start having progesterone and estrogen starting to decline, which actually makes you a lot less able to deal with stress in the way that you once did.
Interesting.
And so I think it's a beautiful opportunity as you cross into your 40s to really, once again, learn how to kind of communicate better with your body and mm-hmm. just realize that kind of like when you got pregnant, mm-hmm. started probably eating a little bit better. You probably didn't exercise as aggressively. You probably rested a little bit more. We just honor that pregnancy is a stage of life that demands a different level of self-care. Why don't we do that when we cross into our 40s? And I know you're not there yet. I know you're like a decade behind me. I work with a lot of women entering perimenopause and menopause, and they are so hard on themselves that they should still be operating like they did in their 20s and 30s, mm-hmm. even though their life is completely different than it was at that age and stage of life.
Right.
You know, their priorities are so different and nobody wants to be at the gym 8 hours a day. You know, nobody wants to be spending 3 hours a day in the kitchen preparing their food to make sure everything is perfectly balanced. And I'm not saying that some people don't want to do that on occasion, mm-hmm. but it's not a sustainable place to live mm-hmm. And to make other areas of your life equally happy. So I would say generally, as I have crossed into different decades, just really I have been I don't want to say forced, but in a way I've been forced to recognize that my body needs different things from me. And if I am open to having that conversation with it and really willing to listen and experiment with what works and what doesn't, we get along so much better. Right. I feel like I'm in a partnership with my body now, where for a long time I felt like I was at war with my body.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That's so cool. Being able to like step back and recognize that life is different and that's okay. And it's going to change. And then asking yourself what you need at that point, not what you have had, but what you actually need, I think is so important, because it's so easy for us to just push through and just be like, well, it's been like this and it has to be like this. But it doesn't, because things have drastically changed, whether you've just had a baby or you're moving into menopause or wherever you are in your stage. It's really different. And to be able to step back and take away those expectations of what you should be doing and just listen and honor what you need is a huge mental shift as
Definitely.
Well.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I always remind my clients too, if you're constantly chasing what was, mm-hmm. you're literally robbing yourself of the opportunity to step into what could be.
Yes.
And that is such a tragedy, because there's such a beauty to aging. You know, we're smarter in a lot of ways. We have a lot of life experience under our belt. And to waste our time always chasing a version of ourselves that once was, I think is a waste of time.
Yeah, and it's probably something that we've built up in our mind and it isn't true anyway.
It isn't true. And I tell clients too, you know, metabolism, because a lot of women, you know, talk about the metabolism like this mysterious energy.
Yeah.
And I always tell them, you know, it's not really mysterious. It's basically cellular function.
Yeah.
Like, how well does your chemistry do its job? How mm-hmm. well do your cells do their job? And cells have a lot of jobs, right? They mm-hmm. bring in nutrients, they detoxify, they build tissues, they communicate with each other. And if we are not treating our body with the respect that it deserves at different ages and stages of life, that cellular function gets really disrupted and misaligned. And so your metabolism, your cellular efficiency could give two rips about how you look.
Totally.
It really could care less about what you weigh on the scale or how you look in the mirror. Mm-hmm. What it cares about is that you're providing your body with what it needs for it to do all of its jobs. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you feel like you have great energy and you feel generally, you know, pretty optimistic and like you have a good mental state most of the time, mm-hmm. and you feel like you don't have extreme cravings and you are, you know, doing what you need to do to take care of yourself, why isn't that enough?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, I know, you know, our culture does a really great job of saturating us in all these messages that we're supposed to look a certain way. But mm-hmm. quite frankly, if you just ask yourself, would I rather be happy or would I rather be thin?
Right.
That is a really profound question for a lot of people, because mm-hmm. most people would answer that question, I want to be happy.
Yeah.
And you can be happy right now. That's a choice. If you stop obsessing so much about a certain look, you can be happy right now.
Right.
And then that happiness will actually allow you to do the work more easily.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think we could get very caught up in chasing old versions of ourselves, how we looked on our wedding day, what, you know, what we weighed when we got out of high school.
Yeah.
And it's silly and we can waste a lot of time there.
Well, it's like, why should you even know that? Why should you know what you weighed when you left high school? I don't know.
We shouldn't, but yeah. And I hope that message is changing. I think it is, like, it's starting to, but I think that many of us just grew up that was such a significant part of our identity.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, later in life, we're trying to break the bonds of that. And it's not such a simple task.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause it's been ingrained and it's become that pattern, and breaking those habits that's where it's hard, right?
It is. And your body, like, for all the new mothers listening, like, your body just created a human being.
Yeah.
Like, if that is not reason to highly respect your physiology, I don't know what is.
Totally.
And when we, you know, I know there's all this talk like about self-love, and I'm always saying, you know, self-love is great, but that's a hard place for a lot of people to start. Because if you've been loathing your body for 20, 30 years, all of a sudden telling yourself to love your body is a really big ask.
Mm-hmm.
But at any point, you can respect your body. you know, your body is doing incredible things for you every single day. Listening to this podcast, that's amazing. Your ears are working, right? The fact that you woke up this morning breathing and that you're able to, you know, chase your kids today and do all the things that you need to do to take care of them, that is your body serving you regardless of how you're treating it. And that's amazing. But we tend to beat our bodies up, like so pissed off that they're not showing up for us in the way that they're supposed to. And we're the ones that need to change, not our not our bodies.
Right.
And if we can move from that place of respect, holy cow, do things start to shift.
Love it.
Right. So asking not what's wrong with your body, but how can I better support it? Mm-hmm. How can I give you what you need today? What do you need?
Right.
Just ask that question.
Yeah. Ask better questions. You get better answers.
Ask better questions always.
Yes. Love it. So for someone who is looking to start to kind of take care of themselves in a better way, or just kind of move into a little bit more of that self-care, which I think is kind of a buzzword right now. I don't know if it's just in the circles that
I know it is.
Self-care. But just take care of themselves in a way that's more supportive of their lifestyle. Where would you recommend that they start?
Yeah, I love this question. I always say, like, the KISS method, keep it stupid simple. Like, start small is the objective, because when you draw a big circle of expectation for yourself, you are literally setting yourself up for failure. And the diet and fitness industry has done a really good job at setting women up for failure. So if you are looking to improve your physiology on some level, you just want more energy, you want to sleep better at night, you want to lose a little bit of weight, like whatever your goal is, give yourself permission to start small. And what I mean by that is, you know, instead of committing to going to the gym 5 days a week all of a sudden and, you know, removing an entire food group from your diet and all these crazy measures, start with something simple like, hey, you know what? I'm going to drink more water. I'm going to drink this much water for the next week or so and see how I do with that. And if you can prove to yourself that you can do that, number one, you're going to feel better. Number two, your physiology is already starting to shift. And number three, you're going to be more motivated to take on more actions. But if you start too big and you fail, you're basically just rewriting the story that you can't succeed with. And that's not going to help you in any way, shape, or form. So give yourself permission to start small.
Love it. And then build.
It's like anything. Like, I always use the example of my kid reading. When he started to learn how to read, had I just like thrown a book in front of him and said, okay, go for it, like he would have broken down in tears and felt like he was never going to succeed.
Yeah.
That's not how we teach children. We teach children by just like learning phonics. Right? They start with phonics and then they start learning the alphabet and then they start stringing words together and then paragraphs. And before you know it, they're reading books. But as adults, we somehow think that we can now skip all of that and just go to reading the novel. And we can't. And we prove that to ourselves daily.
Right.
Because we set the bar so high and every night we're ending the day deflated. Like, why did I fail? Well, because you set yourself up to fail. Stop doing that. Start with phonics.
Like, let me slap you in the face and tell you.
Really? I mean, it seems so obvious from the outside, but I empathize because I have been there and I'm still there. Right. Like, it's an ongoing evolution. There are parts of my life where I still set myself up for failure because I want the thing on the other side so badly. I think that I can cut corners to get there, or I think I can, you know, do all of the work in a short time frame, and I can't.
Yeah,
I can't. And when you really consider how long it took you to get to this stage of your life, you have been practicing certain habits for a really long time. And for you to expect those habits to unravel themselves and all of a sudden replace themselves with something new and really health promoting is insanity. It's not going to happen quickly. It's going to happen by committing to the long haul, building a practice and not just chasing results.
Yeah, I think that's so important for people to remember. And it's not sexy.
It's not sexy.
It's not. Like, doing the work and getting the results, it's hard and it's daily. And you have to do it when you don't feel like it. And maybe when your kid's gone to bed, and just consistently doing it, even though something better might come up. But that's where the magic does happen. And it's so easy to forget that. So easy.
It is. And this is back to what we were saying earlier about how it's so easy to make the commitment to do better.
Yeah.
But then you start, like you said, like you commit to making healthy dinners for your family. And then there comes a night where you just don't feel like doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, you have a choice about just scrapping your commitment to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Or leaning into the discomfort of doing it anyway, because it's something that you committed to and you know there's going to be discomfort along the way. And maybe, you know, maybe you look for ways to make that really simple. Like, could I just go and get a rotisserie chicken tonight and maybe make a salad to go with it, so I'm not having to like cook this whole meal from scratch? There are ways to simplify it. And I think you should give yourself the grace to do that.
Right.
But if you keep throwing in the towel and keep going back to that commitment place of committing to something new, reading the new book, signing up for the new program, that's never going to get you anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I agree. It's pushing through those harder moments.
Yeah.
And just reminding yourself that why you're doing it.
Yeah. I think too, on the flip side of that is allowing yourself to fail as well. So it can be like, oh yeah, you have to push through. But if you don't, then don't fail another day, then get right back on it as well. Because it's so easy to be like, oh, I can't do this. I've got to give up. And then you can move on to something else. But you don't have to give up. You just have to recognize that you're human and shit happens. And tomorrow's a day to do better and be better.
Well, and again, look at our kids, right? Like when our kids learn a new skill, like learning how to walk or learning how to eat or learning how to talk, they screw up constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And if every time they did, we were like, oh, they're never going to get this.
Totally.
Like, that's it. Like, they're a failure. They are doomed to like just crawl for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would, we know that would be nuts. And yet that's kind of how we talk to ourselves.
Yeah.
And so if you're committing to something new, I always tell my clients, expect failure.
Mm-hmm.
Expect it, because then when it shows up, you're not going to be so, you know, in like wondering how that happened. You're not going to be so deflated because you know it's a part of the process.
Yeah.
And if you're not failing, the thing I always remind people is that you're probably not committing to something that's really going to change you.
Right.
So failure is just, it is like we fail our way to success. Bottom line.
Yeah. So true. So true. Well, that's all the questions I have for you. Do you have anything else that you'd like to leave us with today?
No, I don't think so. It was great to talk to you.
Yeah, it was awesome. I am so grateful for you to be on the podcast. And I'll look forward to maybe getting you on another time and talking about
I look forward to it. Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much, Liz.
Thanks, Courtney.